Caesar again, executive vice president of the League of Nations on Civil and Human Rights, the nation's premier civil and human rights coalition comprised of over 200 national organizations. The Leadership Conference is an executive committee member of Americans for Financial Reform. Thanks to everybody joining the call. On today's call to talk about Wall Street reform are Celinda Lake, president of Lake Research and an expert on polling, Damon Silvers, director of policy and special counsel for the AFL-CIO. For more than a year, Americans for Financial Reform has led the fight to reform Wall Street and repair our broken financial system. Throughout this effort, the civil rights consumer and labor communities have committed to ensuring that the bill that reaches President Obama's desk will end the abusive and predatory Wall Street practices that led our nation to the brink of financial collapse and along with it cost countless American families their homes, their jobs, their savings, and the very financial security that they had worked so hard to achieve. That alone would be reason enough to pass Wall Street reform. But we will soon have another reason, perhaps. On Monday, the U.S. Supreme Court, which is building a record of siding with corporate interest against the interest of ordinary Americans, is expected to hand down in a ruling in Free Enterprise Fund versus PCOB, a decision that could gut the Sarbanes-Oxley Act passed in 2002, which actually requires publicly held corporations and their accountants to make accurate and meaningful financial disclosures. The House version of the financial reform bill would weaken the 2002 cleanup measure. If the Supreme Court invalidates much of Sarbanes-Oxley, it would be a major setback for our nation at a time when Americans are demanding that the Congress step in to make sure that big banks and corporations are held to a higher standard of responsibility. At a time when the Supreme Court is increasingly ruling in favor of big interests, Congress must stand with the American people. House and Senate conferees must produce a bill that protects consumers and eliminates Wall Street's ability to operate like casinos. Now I'd like to turn to Celinda Lake, who has information on very recent polling. Celinda?
Hi, thank you so much, and want to thank all of you for your interest, and we're very, very excited about this hot off the press data that literally came out of the field last night. This was a survey of 942 registered voters nationwide. We've also seen in a number of recent studies, including the NBC Wall Street Journal poll that just came out today, confirmation of these numbers. Three big picture points in terms of the data. First, voters strongly favor the current Wall Street reform legislation. And asked whether they favor or oppose Wall Street reform bills cracking down on big bank abuse that's being considered by Congress. 70% of the voters say they favor the legislation. 46% say they strongly favor the legislation. And in everything that we've been doing in all of our work and in all of the public polls, we find the voters paying a lot of attention to this issue and very, very engaged by this issue. We've then tested a kind of values-oriented question that talked about and related this reform to the economy, a relationship that people, frankly, many people have in their heads already. And we found that support and intensity increased when we said that the bill would hold big banks accountable and prevent the reckless behavior that caused the economy to collapse and 8 million Americans to lose their jobs. 73% favored the bill, 55% strongly favored. The last and in some ways the most important question we asked was whether or not people would vote for or against, more or less likely to reelect their member of Congress if she voted for loopholes that would make it easier for Wall Street and the big banks to keep doing business as usual. 78% of voters said they were less likely to reelect their member of Congress. 63% said they would be much less likely to reelect their member of Congress. This is an intense voting issue and far stronger than many other issues we see. That's about 20 points stronger than people usually engage on other kinds of voting issues. We've seen that this is a particularly strong issue with Democrats and independents, but we also find that Democrats, independents, and Republicans would be less likely to vote for their member of Congress if they put loopholes in the bill. 88% of Democrats, 80% of independents, and 67% of Republicans say they would be less likely to vote for their member of Congress if they weakened the bill. 96% of Democrats favor Wall Street reform before we position it. 67% of Republicans, and even 4 out of 10 Republicans, favor the bill. So a very, very strong voting issue, and an issue that we see really appeals to the independent swing voters out there, and one of the highest voting issues with the independent voters. We looked also at other public data that has come out at the same time. NBC Wall Street Journal reported this morning that Wall Street reform was one of the highest voting issues of any issue that they tested. Fox found in May that 69% of voters favored new stricter controls and regulations on Wall Street and the financial industry. When we asked people about Wall Street reform, the NBC Wall Street Journal found 55% of voters saying that people are not doing enough. Only 38% agree with the statement that things are going too far and might curb investment. Pew Research found that 82% of voters thought that Wall Street reform was an important issue. Solid majority, 54%, thought it was a very important issue. So in general, we're finding three things. Overwhelming support, no matter how you ask it, for Wall Street reform. People think are paying a lot of attention to this issue. They think it's an important issue. They think of it as centrally related to what happened in the economy and preventing future problems in the economy. And they're willing to make this a voting issue. That includes, in particular, the swing voters, the independent voters, who are not paying very much attention to many things and cynical about most things, overwhelmingly in favor of Wall Street reform and overwhelmingly ready to apply that issue as a criteria in the November election for their own member of Congress. Let me stop there. David Berman, also on the phone, and Zach Young, who are the heads of our team on this project, and would be glad to answer any questions or offer additional insights.
Yep, this is David. I have nothing to add, but obviously very strong findings.
Mr. Zach, same thing.
Nancy, back to you.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was on mute. Just to back up how important this polling data is, Americans for Financial Reform have delivered over 100,000 petition signatures from folks across the country, from Maine to Arizona, that to urge members to pass strong Wall Street reform. Now we'll hear from Damon Silver, who will provide an update on the conference committee negotiations. Damon?
Yes, thank you, Nancy.
banking institutions to those kinds of risks, with what we have seen to be very damaging consequences. By the way, this matter is related to the history of AIG, which, although not a bank, is an insured insurance company backed up by state level government funds, which required a large public bailout because of its exposure to the derivatives markets. The Volcker Rule requires that banks, bank holding companies, that are insured by the government, not engage in proprietary trading for their own account, or invest their capital in leveraged investments like hedge funds and private equity. The fight over the Volcker Rule is won. Will that rule be mandatory, or will it be just a suggestion to the regulators? And obviously, it's vital that it be mandatory. And then, two, will there be exceptions to it, loopholes to it, that effectively amount to swallow loopholes that are enough, that are, as loopholes often do, swallow the rule itself? Here, the key is whether or not banks will be allowed to sponsor hedge funds and private equity funds for their clients, which they then are allowed to invest bank capital in parallel. The banks have sought this loophole and have sought to have what they describe, right, as de minimis exception that allows bank capital up to a level of 10% to be put in to these funds. 10% doesn't sound like much until you understand that these types of investments are highly leveraged, 10, 20, 30 to 1 typically. And when you take when you put capital into a venture and then borrow against that capital of that level, you are in fact putting at risk not just the capital you've put in, but the entirety of the borrowings. Because effectively, a bank is not going to allow a fund with its name on it and its capital in it to go bankrupt. It would be ruinous from the perspective of the credit rating and the ability of the bank to function as a credit seeking institution. So as a result, you've got to think about whatever percentage they put out there as times 10, 20 times to understand what the real risk is. Given that that's the case, any kind of de minimis exception of this kind has to be really, really de minimis. It would be best not to exist at all, but it really has to be very tiny. 10% is essentially blowing up the rule. 5% is blowing up the rule. Even 2% is fairly dangerous. So that's the first issue, the Volcker Rule. The second issue, and it's very much related to the Volcker, to the concept of the issues raised by the Volcker Rule, is Section 716 of the Senate bill, which was proposed by the Agricultural Committee. And that section requires, in the form passed by the Senate, it requires that effectively that banks move spin off their derivatives dealer business into a separate entity. It is possible that this measure will be proposed in a light form, in which instead of being a separate entity, the derivatives business would be in a separate subsidiary, separately capitalized within the bank holding company structure. Now, again, this is directly responsive to the kinds of circumstances that led to the AIG collapse and bailout. The derivatives dealers routinely deal in the large banks routinely deal in tens of trillions of dollars in notional obligations. They are big. Those businesses are big enough to blow up those banks. Their combination with insured deposits is a toxic combination. So at a minimum, if we're going to get our financial house in order, we need to be able to see regulators, the public, investors need to be able to see those derivatives businesses separately within the bank holding company structure. They need to have capital of their own, so that we're not double counting their capital with the capital that's supporting the public's insured deposits. And ideally, we would preserve 716 in its form, in the form that came from the Senate, which is to move that operation outside the bank holding company structure entirely, much as the Volcker Rule moves hedge funds, private equity, and proprietary trading outside the bank holding company structure entirely. The third issues relate to derivatives more broadly and the regulation of derivatives. There are real questions today as to whether or not access to corporate proxies so that their candidates would be on a level playing field with management's candidates. There has been an effort to put conditions on that language in conference that would make it very difficult in any large company to get enough investors together to meet the threshold requirement for access to the proxy. Again, that, like these other issues, that issue is being fought out in conference as we are meeting here. If there's going to be any chance of really trying to address executive pay abuses, risk management abuses, and the like, it's vital that there be some effort, some ability on the part of long-term investors to hold corporate boards accountable and put individuals on those boards who are psychologically independent of management. This has been, I think, widely understood ever since the Enron Worldcom scandals. However, the political influence of the financial sector, big business, the beneficiaries of executive pay abuses has been such that it's only now that we're really getting a clear shot at it, and the question is, will we actually get that shot? So Nancy, with that, I'm going to turn it back to you. Those are the major issues that are in play at the moment.
And we're open for any questions folks have now. Question?
Yeah, hello. Nancy?
Yes.
Yes, my name is Stuart Gilman. I'm a reporter with Complinet in New York. You were talking about the PCAOB ruling that is expected Monday. I noticed that the Supreme Court has sent the Jeff Skilling case back to the Court of Appeals on the Honest Services Clause. If the Supreme Court rules in favor of the petitioner on PCAOB, the Free Enterprise Fund, would that not just gut Sarbanes-Oxley, but is there a savings clause that would allow SOX to survive, or would it kill Sarbanes-Oxley in addition to cutting it?
We would have to look at it when it actually comes down. Damon, can you answer that?
My understanding is that it would not invalidate the entire act. However, the PCAOB is at the heart of what was done in the Sarbanes-Oxley Act. So that even should its effect of a decision in favor of the plaintiffs in this case be quote narrow, right, it would in fact be very broad in terms of the capacity of our regulatory system to meaningfully oversee the quality of public company financial statements. Now this sounds that statement sounds kind of dry. It's a very serious matter. Despite the financial crisis, we've had a significant improvement in the quality of corporate financial statements since Enron and WorldCom. We would essentially be inviting sort of duplicate catastrophes here by dismantling the regulatory structure that police those statements. So this could be a very, very serious matter. Should this, even in the quote narrow frame here, I would say though that the legal issues in this case, which go to questions of delegation in the Constitution, are quite different from the legal issues in the Skilling case.
Yes,
you can't. Other than as observing, as Nancy mentioned, in general, the Supreme Court majority's general sympathy, it appears, for business for big business defendants. It's hard to draw a clear line from one to the other. From the Skilling case.
I understand, but I'm just. I thank you, Damon, but I was just thinking also in terms of the National Australia Bank ruling today as well. Seems to be a movement in the Supreme Court, not just case by case.
Yes, well, most observers of the court, including Citizens United, that all of us actual human beings would only be too happy to have the rights the Supreme Court believes that imaginary human beings have.
Right.
Yes, thank you.
Next question.
much. Everyone.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you. Bye.